everybody. Welcome back. Admiral Cooper is here, as he is once a month, and his new book is on the way out, The Hidden Secrets of World War II, Volume 4. You can pre-order it right now. It goes to the printer this coming week. So by all means, enjoy history as you will never see it presented anywhere else. That book, Volume 4. How many more volumes do you think? 20? 30?
I think we've got enough for probably six more.
Six more. Good.
There was a tremendous amount of stuff that came to us from our spooks back in those days in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that was when, you know, most of them were still alive. By now, most of them are no longer living. And these were German spooks, some Americans, even some from the Dutch Secret Service. And thanks to these guys, we can break this news now.
Yeah, amazing. Really amazing. Much to come, so get your book. Are you autographing these books when you send them out, when you can, if you have time?
No, not anymore, because it just got way too cumbersome. We have to ship them here from the publisher, which costs money. I'd have to sign them. I'd sit for hours signing books. And then we'd have to ship them to the customer, to the members. Whereas this way, if it comes right from the publisher,
straight from the publisher, it's a drop ship.
Straight from the publisher, it's less money. We may go back into autographing the book, but it'll be on special situations.
Sure, very good. Okay, let's get back to the business at hand, the fun at hand.
Photo number four.
All right. Photo number four. Go ahead. Do you want me to do it?
Hotel Maison Rouge in Strasbourg. This was a very secret thing that not known to many people until we were told by our spooks, which we backed up.
Is that a contemporary picture, Harry?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Because it's in color. If it had been back in 44.
I got you. Yeah.
This was the. I'm tired. It's been a long day, and I was on the radio with John B. Wells last night till midnight after getting up at 4 in the morning. Anyhow, Hotel Maison Rouge on the 10th of August, 1944. There was a major gathering of industrialists, German industrialists, heads of great corporations. They knew that the war was going to be lost. And so they were making plans where to stash their money, their fortunes. And they were discussing various countries: Switzerland, Portugal, Spain, Turkey, various South American countries, with emphasis on Argentina. Argentina was the doorway, because Perón was the most outspoken supporter of the Third Reich. And I think, my own personal feeling, he realized that they were going to need a place to hide out and that they had tons of money to bring with them. So he said, come on down, we'll support you. And at that point, you know, people sometimes ask me, why didn't they go after Hitler, since our FBI knew he was there? Everybody knew he was down in South America. Stalin knew it. Truman knew it. CIA knew it, which was OSS at that time. So why didn't they go after him? Well, first off, I ask, who's they? Well, Israel. Yeah, there was no such place in 1945. Oh, the Mossad. Well, with no Israel, there's no Mossad. Well, why didn't we go after him? Okay. On the one hand, as you know, we believe there was this quid pro quo. You leave Hitler alone and live quietly, and we'll give you all these scientists and everything. Also, which was not mentioned, but is pretty obvious, Perón was protecting Hitler because he was getting paid tons of money And he was way inland. So if they wanted to get Hitler, it would have had to be a military operation. And by that time, the world was tired of war. So Hitler got to live out his life in peace down there at Inalco until 1955 and then various other places till he died on the 13th of February 1962 in Bolivia. So that was a major key point right there, that 10th of August meeting with the German industrialists. And now, as you know, under Bormann's guidance down there in South America, they came up with 750 major corporations, many of which are still around today. And so that's what they did with their loot. Instead of Bormann's idea of building another million-man army, they decided, we'll just take over as much as we can financially. And they did a good job.
Right. February 13th, 1965.
62. 13th February 1962.
Two.
In Bolivia.
Gotcha.
So now we've talked about Trindade, the island in the middle of nowhere,
right,
not to be confused with Trinidad. That's what these next photos are. Photo five, that's me in my Mars Attack gear on a Brazilian ship. The Brazilian Navy was so super nice. You cannot visit this island without their assistance and their permission. They took me out there on one of their ships and choppered me ashore. And if you look at photo six, that is where the Brazilian Navy has a small base only for people to sit there and raise the flag, do experiments, and say, we own 200 miles around here. But in 1938, they pulled their people. Germany came in a week later about with a scientific group. And you see all the buildings down on the shoreline at the lower left. But the part I've got circled is a ridgeline, and that is where they built radio station number two. They built two radio towers there with 80-meter-high antennas so they could keep track, keep in contact with their ships in the southern hemisphere. Photo 7 is that same ridge, but the photo was taken in 1939. Hmm. And to translate, the red stuff up above Geheim means secret. Reichssache means Reich information. And Geheim Kommandant, the commanders, and Chefsack for the chief. Below that, Trindade Island. Below that, radio station, second plateau, March 1939.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the remains of that stuff is still there. We'll get to that in a moment. Go to number eight. This is the big secret. Not a very good picture, but that's a huge big tunnel. It goes right through the island, deep enough and high enough overhead to where you can get a small ship in there or a submarine. We have no proof any ships or submarines were in there. And I tried to get around there the time I was down there, but it is about a mile away from the base.
Where is the water, Harry? I don't see water.
Well, that's a bad picture. All that white stuff, that's water.
Oh, in the foreground. Okay.
Yeah, that's all water. And it's about 15 meters deep.
All right.
Which is about
water. You sail right through there. Sure.
Yeah. But we have no evidence that any ships did or did not.
Uh-huh.
But to get there, you either have to have a small boat, which I couldn't arrange a small boat. There was only a small Navy base there, about 30 people, and they had a big ship out there that they choppered us in from. And there was a ledge about 1 foot off the water level. You could walk for about 200 yards, but on that day there was a heavy sea running, and about every seventh wave would crash over that ledge, and I figured now I'd be on my way to Africa by the time they noticed I was gone.
Yeah, the question would be, is that a natural cave or did someone build it?
It looked to me like it's natural.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, and I have no evidence that it was manufactured or built or blown out or whatever. But I don't have any fact one way or the other. So all I know is it's there. And we've got diagrams and everything. For every picture you see here, we got 10 or 15 other photos, diagrams, drawings, documents to back it up. So,
number nine.
Skip on to number nine. That's yours truly, Indiana Jones, Eat Your Heart Out. That is the remains of radio station number one. That's on the south eastern tip of the island.
On that ridge.
No, no, the ridge was radio station number two.
This is the one on the other end of the island. Okay.
This is down at the southeastern end of the island.
Because the terrain looks different. I see.
Mm-hmm, right. And let me tell you, it's a bitch walking on that island. Everything is up and down. There's hardly any flat spot there. And the ground is all marbles, little tiny rocks. And you take a step forward and slide half a step back, and they have knee-high or waist-high sawgrass that's pulling on your legs. And I think I told you that just off to the left, you can't see him, but there was a guy with me there, and this is a mile and a half away from the camp. So I asked my friend, the captain that was running the show there, my guest, my host, I said, how come you got this guy walking around with me? You afraid I'm going to steal the island? He says, no, that's our Navy doctor, and you're kind of old, and we just want to make sure you don't have a heart attack.
Oh, that's very nice.
That was nice, yeah.
Very thoughtful.
I promised not to have a heart attack. So, number 10, right. I get a kick out of this. This is a dark corner of the restaurant Il Casale in the little town of Schweig in Bavaria, and this is where Pizarro and I would meet in true James Bond style. It was really nice, and that's a packet of information he gave me there, which includes information on where the big guy is interred.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you know, dark, smoky corner, and the hotel, or the owner, I'm sorry, of the restaurant, is a beautiful young lady who always gave me hugs when I got there, just like James Bond.
Wow.
Yeah. Except mine was real, and I never had to jump from helicopter to helicopter, or whatever 007 was doing.
Now, so Pizarro stepped away because he didn't want his picture taken, obviously.
He never did. There's a picture of him sitting between Charlie Grützemacher, who was an engineering officer on a submarine in Norway. And when the surrender was ordered, they filled up all their fuel tanks and their freshwater tanks with diesel. They were going to run off to Tahiti, but they were stopped. And on the other side, on the right side of the photo, is Otto Wermuth, the skipper of U-530 that surrendered in Mar del Plata, Argentina, 8 weeks after the war ended. And right in the middle, there's Pizarro. And he blotted out his face. His face is one big white blob. He didn't want his picture taken. And
the blue folder is full of documents and data that he gave to you.
Yep, and photos.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. He was a good man. He really was a good
remember
man.
Remember his back. You tell everyone his back briefly, very briefly, his background. What he saw, he was a witness to history.
Yeah, his dad served on board the submarines, and his dad was killed on board one of the boats when it went down. And he formed a group called the Delta Task Force, which was a bunch of researchers, historians, scientists, spooks, etc., in Europe. And they dug up all this information, and the whole file is... Well, if you can look through the phone, you'd see it. It's on the floor right here beside my feet. And I'm sending it out page by page to a couple of our members who are translating. And we're going to put the whole works out there. It's great. Fascinating stuff.
Great. All right. Number 11. We get into the next four pages.
Yeah, 11, 12, 13, 14. These are all charts of the Tierra del Fuego. Now, the charts we have do not have that black scribbly stuff on it. I've just done that to prevent cyber pirates from taking the maps. These show a lot of the Uplaza down in the Tierra del Fuego. These are hidden harbors. No facilities, no docks, no wharfs, no repair shops, nothing. Just hidden harbors where ships could hide. Mm-hmm. And in typical German fashion, they have a sheet on each one. We've got a bunch of these sheets. They show where it is, the name of it, the latitude, longitude, what direction you have to come to go in, how deep the water is, what kind of the bottom is for holding anchors, how tall the trees are, how far they are from the steamer lanes or from civilization. And they hit a lot of ships and boats in there. So, number 15, that's one who came through a lot of those areas. Clioe, I don't know how you pronounce that. That's the name of that boat. They had in this Yoli plan they had, which were boats like this, made out of wood, that looked like simple fishing boats so they wouldn't be suspicious, and they didn't bounce radar. They had a bunch of them. Let's see, I got about 15 here. Galeana, Maria Magdalena, Carmelita, Galician, KFK 203, which is also called Mary, Jeanette 1, Soysik, and some name I can't pronounce, Clioe, Passim 1, KFK 204, Santa Barbara, et cetera, et cetera. KFK, our initials mean Kriegs Fish Cutter. In other words, a German fishing boat. And these things also to the Middle East, but mostly to South America. And they came in at the Caleta de los Loros primarily, which is Parrot Cove. And they brought in spies. They brought in radio equipment. They brought in gold, silver to pay off whoever they needed to pay off. And it just, they were back and forth, back and forth. And Kaltenbrunner had a conversation with the number one skipper there, Garbers was his last name. And he asked Garbers if a boat like his, 90 ton, I think they were, if he could get into a small harbor undetected. And Garbers told him, yes, if we had a motor. And so he laid out plans, and that's when they thought they could bring in all sorts of spies at the end of the war and escaping people. Not Hitler. He did not come by boat, despite what those phony...
I know. Well,
yeah.
They're worse than plagiarists, okay? When you borrow other people's material, you should give credit. Simple.
Okay, that's however easy. They
you're
forgot
the hook.
That part.
Nope, not a chance. Harry's material has been purloined and stolen and copied by many of the hucksters who run the TV world game of alleged history. They're liars. Theft is disgusting. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, anyhow, yeah, and... I didn't get a thank you. I didn't get a any royalty checks from that TV comedy show. Anyhow, moving along, sorry. I don't want to get sued.
No. Nope. You won't.
Number 16 was a guy named Siebold. What the hell was his first name? Anyhow, he was a German spy. He went by the name as Harry Sawyer. And, no, he was the FBI guy. The German spy is with him. It was a spy chief named Duquesne or something like that. Siebold was the head of an FBI group bringing down an entire spy ring. And We've got another picture of him in there being questioned in the FBI office. Now we look at photo number next. Let's see. Where am I? Can't get my damn pointer to work. There we go.
Isn't that called ED now or something?
What?
Never mind. Little joke. I'm sure someone
got
it.
Oh, okay.
ED.
I didn't get it either.
ED.
Oh.
Never mind.
Oh, okay. I'm old and feeble. You got to bear with me.
Never mind. I don't know why I did that. It was kind of funny, though. Can't get my pointer to work. Okay. That's it.
Okay.
It's an ED joke.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm slow to catch on. Okay, number 17.
All right.
These are the two
17.
Guys. 17. These are the two
yep.
guys that were going to sabotage our atomic bomb program. In the back, you see William Kolpaugh. He was a U.S. Navy deserter. He was a lieutenant. Went over to the German side. And the tall guy in front became a good friend of mine, Erich Gimpel.
Mm-hmm.
And they were landed at Frenchman's Cove up in Maine. And this is the way they looked. They looked like they walked right out of Gentleman's Quarterly in
a fishing
village.
Is that how they looked when they were captured?
That's how they looked when they came ashore.
They got off the boat looking like that. Wow.
Yeah. In a snowstorm in a New England fishing village. They got down. They were supposed to sabotage the Manhattan Project. So what did they do? They went to Manhattan, not realizing that was code for the University of Chicago. And
come
the
on.
Problem
they,
was...
Wait. That's pretty bad intelligence. Jeez.
Yeah, the German intelligence group was really pitiful. Their fighting troops were some of the best trained, best led, best equipped
right.
in the war, but their intel service was pathetic. They dropped off in 1942. They dropped off four guys at mm-hmm. Long Island and four guys just south of Jacksonville at Ponte Vedra Beach, and it turned out one of the guys was more communist than Nazi. And first chance he got, he called the FBI and turned them all in. Mm-hmm. So that guy got 30 years in prison. Another guy that helped in the prosecution got life. The other six guys went to the chair.
What happened to Gimpel?
Okay, in 1944, Gimpel and Kolpaugh, they were caught because they had $100,000 in cash and diamonds, and each one wanted to have control of it. I don't know why Kolpaugh did, but Gimpel found that he's a big, tall, good-looking guy, spoke English, and he found that the sales girls at Macy's loved big, tall, good-looking guys with a lot of money. So they kept fighting over who got the money, and finally Gimpel got the money away from Kolpaugh, and Kolpaugh got mad, called the FBI. Like I say, their intel service was pitiful. So they both got grabbed. They both got tried, both got found guilty of espionage, and they were 3 days away from being hanged when FDR died. Truman immediately put a stop to executions because the war was almost over. Then when the war was over, they sent him to Leavenworth. Gimpel didn't like the accommodations there and tried to break out, so they sent him to Alcatraz. And when he finally got his time served, and they let him loose. He went where all good German spies go. He went to South America. And he came up to Chicago when we had a convention up there. He did that two different times. Nice guy. He was still chasing the dollies when he was in his 80s then. And so I was in contact with him down in South America until he finally died, and now his daughter is still a member of Shark Hunters. And I got a lot of information from him, too, because he was in the Abwehr, which is the German Secret Service. They had like 20,000 agents altogether. His serial number was 146. So he was in it pretty early.
Yeah, I'd say.
He was supposed to lead another sabotage effort earlier in the war where they were going to come with a big U-boat and a couple of Stuka dive bombers in waterproof containers. They were going to surface. They were going to put the wings back on these planes, take off and bomb the locks on the Panama Canal. But They found out that the U.S. found out and was waiting for them, so they didn't do it. Like I say, their intel service was pathetic. Number 18 tells you how to get your... I know you want me to hurry up, because
no,
I get verbose.
No, you're fine. We've got 25 minutes, so...
Okay. Okay. Anyhow, number 18 tells you how to shop for books online, too, on our website. Easy. Easy. We make life easy for you. However, for this special offer of only $20 per book, plus shipping, you got to call or email us, because our shop option on our website is not keyed in for the special offer. There you'll still pay $25, just so you know. Now, in photo 19, this is what got me started with interest in the U-boats. I was a kid growing up during the war years, all through my Air Force years, my college, my racing years, everything. I still thought Germans were all evil Nazis, because that's what we were taught. So then I took off with my three-girl crew on my sailboat and went to the islands and came across Darby Island in the Exuma chain, quite a way south. And this is the remains of the mansion that was on the island, and that's what got me started. I asked the old caretaker what's going on, and he said that U-boats had stopped there during the war years for fresh water and food. My immediate thought was, ah, them dirty Nazis. Now, whether they did or did not, we don't know for sure, and any of the U-boat skippers I talked to said absolutely not. But that's what got me started. And the old caretaker showed me how to chop on through the woods. Photo 20, that's a photo I took when I was there in 1979 on my sailboat. And since that time, unfortunately, the word has gotten out about the U-boats. And there were a couple of guys called me a year ago, wanted all this information about Darby Island because they wanted to go dive on the U-boat that was sunk off there. And I told them there ain't no U-boat sunk there or anywhere in the Bahamas. So anyhow, I helped them out, and that's another story. 21, this is inside the radio shack that was still on the island when I was there in 1979, and the ruins of the barracks building also. I understand it's the island has been cleaned up. It's for sale, $3 million for an island that's out in the middle of no damn place with no fresh water, no electric, no nothing. So I think
if you drilled down, you wouldn't get any water, fresh water, in all likelihood.
Probably not. The island is only about 3 miles across. It's
good luck getting
round.
A drilling rig out there, too, by the way. Yeah.
Well, not only that, they had 26 freshwater wells on the island, which was incredibly rare, mm-hmm. but they drew the water too fast. You got to let it percolate through, and they drew it too fast, and they drew in mm-hmm. the seawater, and mm-hmm. that's the end of that story.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
Now we digress a little bit.
I'm still looking at number 20 here. That's 1979 when you were there.
Yeah.
Is that structure restorable?
Oh,
looks
yeah.
like it.
Better. Well, look at photo number 19. That mm-hmm. is a recent photo.
Gotcha.
But the problem is, like I was starting to say, the story got out about Nazis and U-boats and all that, and obviously there's gold hidden. So people were in there
on Darby Island.
Yeah, looking for the gold. There ain't no gold there, for Christ's sake. This was owned by a guy named Guy Baxter, who was a Brit, and he hated the crown because and he owned a bunch of islands in that area. He hated the crown because they were taxing the hell out of him. He was one of the Bay Street boys, which is what they referred to the shop owners, business owners on Bay Street in Nassau. Mm-hmm. And there was another guy, Sir Harry Oakes, who was buying all sorts of islands, and there was a guy right in the middle. Boy, I can't remember his name. He was Harold Christie. He was a realtor. So he was getting islands from Guy Baxter and for Sir Harry Oakes to buy, and he was making commissions from everybody. And then, unfortunately for Sir Harry Oakes, one day he woke up dead. Somebody had beaten him to death and set his bed on fire because he was ultra wealthy, and he was against the gambling casinos coming into Nassau.
I see.
And we figure that's what happened. And his son-in-law...
whoever built that structure, they had to haul all that concrete, all those building materials in there.
Yep.
So it is interesting. It obviously had a yard. It was landscaped at one point.
Yeah, and they had a dock.
Yeah,
they had a dock and all. So.
Okay,
anyhow,
go ahead. Sorry.
Sir Harry's son-in-law was a wealthy playboy, and he was the one that they tried to frame for the murder. Now, whether he did it or not, we never knew. He became a Shark Hunters member back in the 1980s, I think he came aboard, maybe in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a copy of his book, A Conspiracy of Crowns, which he signed for me, but he never did say whether or not he was the one who clipped Sir Harry. And then a couple other Shark Hunters members went over there and made a movie about it. Oh, hell, 30 years ago, I guess it was. Rico Browning, who was also a member of Shark Hunters. He was also, if you remember the old movie Creature from the Black Lagoon, he was the guy in the lizard suit. And he also produced the Flipper series down in which was filmed in the Keys, and also Sea Hunt with Mike Nelson, who was played
Lloyd Bridges.
Lloyd Bridges, right. So there's our contact with those guys.
Now, who?
And that place is still sitting.
Did what's his name die in that house on Darby Island, or where was he killed?
Oh no, Sir Harry was killed in his home up on New Providence, which is the island where Nassau is. He lived out in the Pine Barrens, and his house had, after he was dead, many years after he was dead, his house caught fire and burned to the ground. So,
how far is Darby Island from Nassau?
Oh, let's see. As the crow flies, probably about 120, 130.
So it's out there. Okay. I was wondering what we were going to do when we buy Darby Island.
You got $3 million?
Not quite.
There was another island a lot closer to Nassau, Whale Key in the Berry Islands. This was owned by Marion Carstairs, whose nickname was Joe, not J-O for Josephine, but J-O-E, because she was a hardcore lesbian. Mm-hmm. And she was the heiress to, I think it was the Seagram's fortune, and she had a huge, big mansion on Whale Key and a Roman swimming pool that was open to the sea. I mean, you could be in the swimming pool and 20 yards away was the ocean. And she had wild parties there all the time, but no men were ever invited. And I was on that island, and it was deserted. I found a boathouse on a remote part of the island, and there were three Allison V-12 engines in there, like you would have in a Mustang fighter. And this woman, Jo, was a powerboat racer back in the 30s, and it was suspected that she was helping U-boats too. Never been proven one way or the other.
That Allison engine, that wouldn't fit in any kind of a German piece of equipment. That's a British engine all the way.
Right. That was the Allison or Rolls-Royce, whatever it was, the V-12 engines that went into the Mustangs. No, she was using it for her powerboat racing.
Huh. What a story.
And it all ties together.
Right.
So, anyhow, so much fascinating history. I love what I'm doing here. I used to take history tests when I was in school by tossing a coin. Until one, because it was boring. But now I'm at the places where it took place. I'm there. Yeah. I met people, et cetera. Right. Never met this guy, though, in number 22. Never met him, but
that's number 22.
Yeah, that's the guy whose birthday was today.
That's the birthday boy.
Yeah.
Now, that picture was not taken during the war, before the war. You'll see the date right there. 1947 at the La Falda Hotel Annex in Argentina.
Yeah, and the Eden Hotel in the town of La Falda. Yep. And I stayed some years ago. I stayed in the annex because the hotel itself is empty, vacant, deserted, whatever you want to call it. They got a little museum in there, and that's it. But this is the annex, and you can stay there. 12-foot-high ceilings and claw-footed bathtubs. Just nothing's changed. And this was in 1947 when Hitler was there. He looks good for a guy that's been dead for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And those were two of his supporters, Walter and Ida Eichhorn. And Walter's brother was off there to the left, but I never knew his name.
Do you finish.
Go ahead, no. Go.
I remember, I think I asked you about this on the program, the Eichhorns, it might have been their son, cousin, I don't know. There was one involved in a murder in I think, France. It was a big story. And he got off. And it was said at the time because he was related to the Eichhorns. And this is this was a big story. It was kind of the age, maybe in 1970s or 80s, but I'm wondering if it was one of their kids.
That I don't know, but next time I go there to Argentina, their children don't want to talk to anybody at all about this time, which is understandable. However, Martine says that if we just show up at their door, knock on their door and say, hey, look, this guy's traveled 5,000 miles and he's not a Nazi hunter or anything like that. He's a journalist. Let's talk. And I think that would be successful.
Right.
I'm maybe going to go down there November.
So.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Yeah.
So.
Very good. Okay.
Well,
there's a picture for you, everyone, and that is an accurate picture, no photoshopping. That's
right. We got three photos in different poses, from different shots, I mean, in this area. Three others from different directions.
Yes. Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Very good.
And Uncle Addy there was drinking tea because he didn't drink coffee.
No.
Café is gift, tea is churn. Coffee is poison, tea is sweet.
Very good. Or scheiss. Uh-huh.
Not scheiss.
No, I mean, he didn't like it. All right.
Yeah, I know. Scheiss is a little over-descriptive, I think.
I know. All right.
So, next one, number 23. We talked about this, I think, the last show or the show before that, but I bring it up again because it figures into a lot of stuff in this book. Landong, 36 meters deep, on the 27th of September, 1945, at midnight. And Treffpunkt, that's the meeting point, when they met with Group Sargo. Sargo was the top spy, German spy in South America, 27th of September, 1945. That's when a lot of the leadership of the Third Reich came ashore. And photo 24, this was my best lady friend in Europe, and she told me that whole story 20, 30 years ago, and I had no idea what she was talking about until I got this chart. She said that on 27th of September, 45, the leadership of the Third Reich came ashore in Argentina. And I knew nothing about that until I saw this chart, and I couldn't reveal the chart for 25 years. And when I did a couple months ago, our mutual friend, who goes nameless, called called me up and filled me in on all the rest of the details.
Yep. That guy knows so much.
He does. He does. He does. He does. Now, 24, this interesting. That's my friend Ingrid Scharfenberg. You could not take her picture. If you took her picture, I don't care how good a friend you were, she would throw you out, and that would be the end of the ball game. So I told her I wanted her picture. She said, there's a picture of me hanging in the lobby. Go take a picture of that picture, and that's okay. So that's the picture of the picture that was hanging on the wall at her hotel, Zum Turken. But then she was murdered. Her daughter inherited the hotel, sold for, I think, 3 point something million euros. And it was bought by somebody who is remaining anonymous. It's not open. They said they're going to do what they can to erase the dark history of that hotel. Because Hitler's personal guard stayed in that hotel when he was on the mountain. His house, the Berghof, was only about not even 100 yards away from her hotel. The switchboard for all the high muckety-mucks on the mountain, the switchboard was in the basement of her hotel. There was one well-maintained tunnel system connected under her hotel, which we always visited. But now that's closed, who knows for how long. But there were two or three other tunnel systems in there that most people didn't know about, and she let me go in there because she was such a nice lady. She was a tiny little thing, about 4'10", but tough as nails. She was a sweetheart.
Look at the expression on her face.
I know.
That's integrity, strength, great character.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nobody was allowed in her kitchen except her and Marianne, her assistant, except me. I'd come down at 6 in the morning, come in the kitchen, and she'd be sitting there. Oh, good morning, Harry. Marianne, make tea for Harry. Harry, would you like scrambled eggs, bacon? Yes, please. Okay, she'd get up and she'd make my breakfast for me.
Wow.
But
nice.
Unfortunately, she was clipped.
Why do you think they took her out? She wasn't going to talk about anything. What's the deal?
Well, that'll be a personal conversation between you and me. I got a whole folder on proof.
Okay.
But our mutual friend also says if I publish any of that, I better not go to Germany anymore.
Okay.
That and also the murder of, the accidental death of Jörg Haider, the political strongman of Austria.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
What can I say?
Very good.
Number 25.
25.
Nummer 25. Okay, this one ties some things together. Square by number one, Puerto Coig. That is where the unnamed submarine put Martin Bormann ashore and our friend Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco, who was member number 158 of Shark Hunters, gave us a ton of information. And then they were going to go up the coast close to Buenos Aires and scuttle the boat.
Don Angel,
fine.
By the way, for you listeners who are new to this, was in the bunker in 1945 and saw Adolf and Eva removed on stretchers. By Bormann.
Forcibly drugged under orders of Bormann, right.
So Don Angel was a witness to real astounding things. And I'm Harry's friends. All right.
Yeah. He met with Hitler in South America in
1952. 1952, yes.
Yeah.
I remember.
So now something suddenly popped up here from the spook stuff I've been sitting on. Number two, El Turbio. There was an airstrip there, and there were some specially equipped Ju-88 bombers that were reconfigured to carry a few passengers. And they had a 900-liter belly tank and two wing tanks, and they flew hopscotching from airport to airport down Europe to Spain, and then from the bulge of Africa, which is by Dakar, I think it is, they'd fly across to the bulge of Brazil, which I think is by Santos, which is, what, 700, 800 miles, and then, you know, refueling all along the way, and they landed down here at El Turbio.
These were 88s?
Ju-88s, yeah.
Okay. That's only 700 or 800 miles across, huh, from Africa to Brazil. I didn't know it was that close.
Right. Take a look at your charts, the bulge of Brazil and the bulge of Africa. They come towards one another, and it's not very far. Well, too far to walk, but, you know, to put a lot of fuel tanks on
the
plane.
So the 88s, what happened to them? What are they doing? Did we ever find them? Or are they stored somewhere in a hangar?
That I don't know. Uh-huh. I probably could have found out from Pizarro, but unfortunately he died way too early.
Yeah. Were those circumstances suspect? I think they were, weren't they?
He was in his early 60s. He was in perfect health. He was a big guy. Looked like a linebacker, about 6'2". Mm-hmm. And he banged his leg on a table or something, walking through his house. He got a bruise. He went to the hospital. Oh, doggone it. He died from sepsis. And his son was supposed to be helping us out, but his son was a real turd. So we don't have anything to do with his son anymore. It's really a shame. Because I said, I talked to the kid on the phone, he's probably in his 50s by now. Mm-hmm. And I said, you've got to protect all the files that your father has acquired. He said, oh, yeah, we're going to protect that. I said, good, good. Can we still work together? You know, you send me copies like your father. Oh, Jesus, you think I wanted to bang his daughter or something? So I told him what I thought of him, and somehow he didn't take it in the positive, constructive manner I meant it. So we have no more conversation. You know, unfortunately, people like that, first off, Pizarro, worked so hard to dig all this up to preserve the history of his native country, Germany.
Right.
And then it goes to his son, who doesn't have the same intense drive that his father had, and he's going to sit on it and protect it from what, from who, for why? I don't know.
It's weird.
Yeah. Sad. It'll be lost to history.
Okay, 26.
26. We've seen this picture before.
Yes, we have.
Why is the president of Argentina got her hand stuck out like that in 1974?
It's hard to sleep like that, too.
Yeah. Incidentally, she's doing it all wrong. The thumb is not supposed to be sticking out to hang a coat on it or anything. It's supposed to be flat. And that, you know, the so-called Nazi salute, that's baloney. That's the old Roman salute. Right. Nah. When two men would meet each other, they'd greet like that to show they've got no weapon.
The swastika was used by one of America's, it was a division, I think. It was their
the 45th Infantry.
There you go.
45th Infantry Division, because they came out of the Southwest, and that was the Navajo sign of good luck.
Yep.
And so after the war started, they had to change
their... Don't you draw that symbol now. Boy, that's evil.
No. They had to change their symbol to the Thunderbird. The Hindus, the Greeks, they've all been using that swastika for...
It's ancient.
2,000, 3,000 years. But, incidentally, the Spitlickers, Southern Poverty Law Center, have claimed that I wear a swastika ring. I don't. I've never even owned a swastika ring, but if I did, so what?
Well, it's that 12-inch tattoo on your chest they're talking about, isn't it?
No, I'm a fanatic about that. I almost had a tattoo when I was just a young punk in the Air Force. I was going into Strategic Air Command, and their emblem was a big shield with the big iron glove with thunderbolts coming out of it. So me and a bunch of my buddies went out, hanging out at the local hangout, the Cup and Saucer on Colfax. And we decided we're going to go get the tattoo. Okay. We couldn't find the tattoo parlor, thank God. So I don't have any tattoos on me.
Well, there's a lot of self-abuse with that, self-abuse.
Yeah, I guess.
Desecrating your body, it's just bizarre. Okay,
so 27. So anyhow, this is Perón's widow, and we know why she's doing that, because they were still tied in with him.
You bet. All right,
27,
let's jump to 27.
This is going to break your heart.
All right, this is, I know. Sickening. All right, go ahead. This is important.
In Elko, this was the home where Hitler and Eva Braun stayed from 45 until 55, 1945 to 55. It was built in the closing moments of the war by Mercedes of Argentina. It was going to be a resort for their executives, I guess, because a beautiful area right behind where Nahuel is standing with the camera. Right behind him is this big, huge, beautiful lake, Lake Nahuelhuapi, and off behind and a little off to one side, the Andes Mountains come up. So it's great for skiing. It was great for the lake, and it was incredibly remote. It could have been on the dark side of the moon for that. The only way there was by boat or by seaplane until the last many years. They built a road that goes right behind the place, which is not good.
They built a road all the way around the lake is what they did, on into Chile.
Yeah, and it goes off to Chile. So, unfortunately, well, to get to the house from the road, you got to walk a good mile through nasty, nasty terrain. But a mile up the road further, it goes within 100 feet of the barns and the farm that was attached to Analco. But now the place is going to hell because of the volcanic ash, and now it's been sold, I think it was 23 million euros, and we don't know what's going to happen to it. I don't think it's going to be a happy situation.
Well, we're praying that the people will properly restore and refit the house. If they want to put a hotel there, there's plenty of room for it. The whole place should be revived. It would generate, maybe greed will save the day, because that would generate, not the same as the Eagle's Nest, but it would generate a lot of money every year for tourists if they were to come to see that house.
Like you say, not like the Eagle's Nest. The Eagle's Nest is right in an area where there's umpty zillion people. This is a way off. You know, people say it's by San Carlos de Bariloche. No, it's not. It's like 60 clicks away, right near a little village called Villa La Angostura, and it is not on any tourist place. So,
unfortunately, the people who bought it might decide to destroy it.
It's a possibility.
Now, let's hope that they figure the money aspect of it is worthy.
Yeah, we hope.
They'll keep it, yeah.
If I can get down there in November or so, I gotta come up with a few thousand bucks more. But if I can get down there in November, which is springtime for them, I'm going to go down there and film the hell out of it. I didn't film it thoroughly, just little snips here and there. But I'll film the hell out of it. And several of the other place, that one up in northern Argentina where it was a compound where they were still training soldiers way after the end of the war. Mm-hmm. I've taken photos, but I want to take a lot of videos. When I went there, I was non-compos mentis. It was right after I'd fallen off my roof, broke my back, knocked myself out, and a week later I was in Argentina. So I took some shots, but I didn't take videos. So I got to go back and take a bunch of video.
All right. We have to wrap this up. We're running right out of time here. That was really an extraordinary little tour. The book is coming out. You can pre-order it right now. Printers next week. Hidden Secrets of World War II, Volume 4, Admiral Harry Cooper. Thank you. That was really fun. We'll do it again.
My pleasure, and save a piece of the birthday cake for me.
Oh, of course. Will do. All right. Good night, Harry. Thank you.
Take care. Talk to you next time.
All right. Okay. Admiral Cooper. What a guy. What a story. Back with more in a minute.